You hear that dog?
No.
No.
Okay, good.
You got a whole farm back there. It's just as it was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
They follow you.
Hey there. Welcome to season 15 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is Collective Impact, exploring AEC organizations and professionals shaping a more inclusive and innovative built environment.
As always, we are not experts. We are just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
All right. So on today's episode, we are going to talk about LC Eves and the Society of Women Engineers, or SWE. I'm Lizzie Rahr, drinking iced coffee in Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Nurjeri Rivas, into smoothies lately in Houston, Texas.
And I'm Jessica Rogers, drinking a regular hot coffee, but out of my SBP mug that can be purchased on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/merch, based out of Miami, Florida.
Nice.
Yeah. Love the plug.
Yeah.
Okay, so today we're talking about the Society of Women Engineers, also known as SWE. So SWE has actually been around a long time, but also had a lot of buildup before it was formally founded. So today we're going to learn about that time period through the founding of the organization and talk about LC Eves.
Excellent.
Let's do it.
Okay, so our girl LC Eves was born on May 5th, 1898 in Denver, Colorado. She grew up in Idaho Springs, Colorado, which is about 30 miles west of Denver, heading up into the mountains. Her dad was a watchmaker and a jeweler, and her mom worked as a bookkeeper previously.
A watchmaker and a jeweler, fancy.
Very fancy.
Mm. Elsie had a really active, outdoorsy childhood in the mountains. She grew up trout fishing, hiking, target shooting, swimming, and playing tennis.
Okay, maybe not so fancy. Trout fishing.
I like this girl.
I feel like those are all the things that you would do when you live in a place like Colorado, yeah?
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, for sure. She also did really well in school, though, and particularly loved math. Sadly, her high school only taught up to basic algebra, so her teacher was giving her extra trigonometry homework on the side because she was so ahead. And to top that off, her teacher got asked by the local mining engineer if they could recommend their best student who knew trigonometry to be an assistant at their company. So at 15, Elsie got a job.
Heck yeah, that's so great. Elsie had such an ally and champion.
Yeah, use those non-existent labor laws to your advantage, girl.
Well, she ended up getting a scholarship to go to the Colorado School of Mines. However, her dad didn't want her to go to the School of Mines.
Why, Dad? Was it because she was a woman or because he was scared for her safety?
Yeah. Why?
So she said he didn't have any issue with her going into engineering. He actually really supported her doing that. But he didn't want her to be the only woman at school. He wanted her to have like a more typical social experience. And he was worried that the School of Mines wasn't going to be friendly to her. Because it sounds like at that time it was truly only men enrolled.
I believe that. I mean, I can see Dad's concern, but still, we gotta start somewhere. If she truly wanted that, then we could have found a way to safely support her.
Agreed. And for that time, to me, I'm surprised that one, she even got accepted. And two, that she got a scholarship, so.
Yeah, so they clearly didn't have an issue with it, but yeah, it just, I think it would have been a different school experience.
Yeah.
So instead, she enrolled at the University of Colorado at Boulder in the engineering school in 1916, which did have a few other women in it. But I think the main thing was that, like, being at a larger university like that was going to have more women, which I think was his main concern, like in other departments.
Gotcha.
We can't fault Dad too much.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. It also sounds like Elsie was going to be happy with anything math.
True. And during that time, at least she had, the girl had options.
Yeah. I do think she was disappointed because she was like, I'm going to be in mining, you know, like a mining engineer.
Yeah.
You know.
She got over it.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. But in college, our girl was involved, all right? She was booked and busy with sports and groups. She was on the basketball team and the tennis team. She won the women's tennis singles tournament 3 years in a row and the doubles 1 year. She was the first woman to be the president of the engineering society on campus. And she worked as a secretary for the dean of engineering, Dean Ketchum, who sounds like he really wanted to help her succeed.
Girl, get your overachieving on.
Yeah, love to see it. Also, we love a supportive dean.
We do.
She was also taking summer jobs, working as a draftsperson for the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad Companies and the U.S. Bureau of Public Roads, where she computed the cut and fill for a highway that was being built.
She was booked and busy all year around.
Yes. Okay, while Elsie's at Boulder, there are these other two women who are in the engineering school, Lou Alta Melton and Hilda Counts Edgecombe. Lou Alta was from Wisconsin and was studying civil engineering. Hilda was from Texas and studied electrical engineering. Lou Alta and Hilda decided in 1919 to send out a survey to engineering and architecture departments in universities around the country and ask them for the names and addresses of their female students so that they could form the American Society of Women Engineers and Architects, ASWEA.
What a great idea. I like that they reached out to the universities around the U.S. They were thinking of going national from the beginning.
Agreed. That sounds so cool. It kind of reminds me of the girls in civil a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they got some not so supportive responses, as you can imagine. From a professor at the University of North Carolina, they said, "In reply to your recent communication, I would state that we not now, have never had, and do not expect to have in the near future any women students registered in our engineering department."
Thank you, sir. Love the feedback. Hope you're rolling in your grave today.
And that a dog pees on it.
Other letters were more hopeful. A professor at Georgia Tech wrote, "Up to the present, women students have not been admitted to GA Tech. Yesterday, the city of Atlanta conferred suffrage on women in city affairs, so no knowing what may happen." Another letter noted that even though their school hadn't had female students, he knew that they had been admitted to schools in the North and the East and that they were excellent students.
Support. Little by little, you're gonna get somewhere.
If anything, I hope these letters were eye-opening for them to see their lack of female students.
Yeah. Well, a woman from the University of Michigan, Helen Smith, wrote to them very excited to hear from fellow female engineering students and said that at U of M, they had formed a group in 1914 called the T-Square Society for female engineering and architecture students.
Yay, groups unite.
First of all, cute name, T-Square Society. Second, I bet that made your little Wolverine heart proud, didn't it, Lizzie?
You know it. I loved it. So in 1920, Lou Alta and Hilda compiled their results. 139 women from 23 universities had taken engineering or architecture classes in some capacity. One of the U of M T-Square Society ladies, Hazel Quick, kept in touch with Lou Alta and Hilda and helped them officially organize ASWEA in 1920. Elsie, if you remember, was the president of Boulder's General Student Engineering Society at this time. And she supported Hilda and Lou Alta in starting this group, and she was a member.
This is so great. I can imagine all the letters going back and forth between them, how long this would have taken, which probably added to the excitement and commitment they all had to one another and what they were doing. It's really, really great.
I love it.
So sadly, ASWEA didn't gain as much traction as one would have hoped. But as you might have guessed, it was the precursor or a precursor to what would become SWE. Hilda would later be a founding member of SWE, and Hazel was a founding member of SWE's Detroit section.
One thing leads to another, and it's also good to know they didn't give up. It sounds like they learned from whatever reason ASWEA did not succeed and then made it work even better with SWE.
You know, they didn't have social media as we do now, so I can imagine it being hard to keep in touch, gain that momentum. but I'm glad it resurfaced and evolved into what we now know today.
Yeah. Okay, back to Elsie's story for a bit, and then we'll hop back to Sui, kind of going back and forth.
Okay, because I was starting to forget about Elsie. Now I want to know more about Hilda, Hazel, and Lou, but okay, back to Elsie.
Future episode alert. But yes, let's stick to task and get back to Elsie.
Right. So in 1920, Elsie graduated and was the first woman to graduate with a degree in civil engineering from Boulder.
Hey, not surprised, but still so proud.
After graduating, Elsie taught engineering math at Boulder and worked for Colonel Herbert S. Crocker at Crocker & Fisher, a consulting engineering firm. She was doing all the office work, specifications, cost control, bidding, contract documents, and correspondence.
Nice.
Look at you, Elsie.
After 6 years, she decided she wanted to move to New York City. So in 1926, she asked Colonel Crocker for recommendation letters that she could send to possible engineers. So she sends a letter to the editor of the Engineering News Record, ENR, who Crocker had a connection with. This was, is, it still exists today, a weekly magazine that prints construction news, data, analysis, etc. It's apparently considered the, quote, Bible of the construction industry and covers everything from financial to safety and environmental issues.
Why have I never heard of this?
Right?
Yeah, but also, okay, having connections, but I feel like it's about to be some BS.
You do? I don't smell it yet. I have hope.
Well, Elsie sends over her letter of rec to the editor, and he kindly tells her that she might want to try over at Macy's, as that might be a little more appropriate place for her to apply and work.
You called it, Jessica. Hope is futile.
So is Macy's like another engineering firm that we never heard of? Because if not, the editor can drink battery acid.
We're violent on this episode.
I woke up and there's violence in my coffee.
Yeah, so instead of trying another place, she decides to go over this guy's head and sends her letter of rec to the managing editor of ENR, who Crocker also knew. He took her more seriously and found her a job. Although it sounds like maybe he made a job for her. Either way, she got a job as editorial assistant in a new department, the Market Surveys Department. Needless to say, she took the job, and within a year, she was director of Market Surveys.
Okay. I wonder how that editor felt when he sees Elsie walking through those office doors. Just like, oh, here.
I hope every time she saw him, she smiled really large and said, good morning, how are you? And said his name. And he'd probably be like, I'm fine. And then she'd go, oh, I'm glad. I'm great. Hope you have a good day. Every time. She should do that every single time.
Agreed.
So this job was collecting field research and then writing up reports on the cost of construction equipment and services based on the market research. This would then get published in the magazine.
Wow, so that actually would be important for us now.
100%. She's doing important work, not just busy work. They're taking her very seriously.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right, so Elsie is in NYC living her best life. And in 1927, she becomes the first woman accepted to the American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, as an associate member with full voting privileges. This is notable because 11 years earlier, another woman, Nora Stanton Blatch Barney, was denied membership to ASCE. Nora's story is for another day, but Elsie said that once she had a job at ENR, Dean Ketchum, from Boulder, and Colonel Crocker came to her and asked if she'd be willing to test the ASCE and try to break their opposition to women members. So she applied with their support and was accepted.
Oh, yeah. Way to go, Elsie, getting full voting rights. Hope she's voting on absolutely everything.
Yeah, love to see it. And I think we've had Nora on our list of episodes of ladies we wanted to talk about. So, future episode alert. Plus, I want to know what excuse they gave when denying Nora membership.
Yeah, Nora has been on our list since 2020. She's one of the most famous pioneer engineers in the U.S.
Yes.
Yeah.
She shows up a lot on lists during Women's History Month.
Yep.
Yes, for sure. Well, I know we're not talking about ASCE today, but we should also note that Elsie goes on to become the first female full member, fellow, and life member of ASCE.
There has to be a first for everything, right? And I can imagine it being a lonely path for her to be the first to all of these things.
Yes, you're right. But still, go Elsie! Really liking this for you, breaking all the glass ceilings you see. How much time we got left? Maybe we should touch on ASCE?
Oh no, Nojiri wants to take us down a rabbit hole.
We actually have a lot left to cover, so no time for tangents. But I'm pretty sure that we've talked about ASCE before and we'll have to come back to it.
I still like reminders, but okay, no tangents. Staying on track today.
In 1932, Elsie got promoted at ENR to be the manager of the business news department. She had 145 reporters and 25 office staff working under her. She kept this position for the next 31 years. During this time, she was instrumental in developing construction cost indexes and forecasting activity in the industry. Her tenure there spanned the Great Depression and World War II, so her work was critical during these big economic swings for companies to estimate their cost of construction. She spearheaded the post-war planning statistics, which were made into a continuous inventory. This is now ENR's backlog of proposed construction.
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good, and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
I'm telling you, important work.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
All right. So during this time in Elsie's career, things are brewing among the women engineers in the country.
Ooh, let's go.
In 1945, there were 24 female engineering students at Drexel Institute of Technology, now Drexel University, in Philadelphia. 11 freshmen, 5 upperclassmen, and 8 night school students. They got together at a tea hosted by the Dean of Women, where they would chat and the upperclassmen could get advice and tips to the freshman ladies, like how there was no women's restroom in the building where all their classes were, so you might have to go to the far corner of the second floor of the main building and plan accordingly.
I love this. Not the no bathroom in the building, but I love the camaraderie, that they at least had each other to complain about these things.
And I hope to do something about it. Like, they had each other to do something about it.
Yeah. Well, also, a machine shop class was required for everyone except chemical engineering students. But to access the machine shop, you had to go through the men's locker room to get there. Apparently, the ladies would go into the locker room and sing "She's Coming Around the Mountain" as loud as they could to give warning that they were walking through the locker room.
Okay, so I love the workaround, but I can't believe this still. Having to go through the men's locker room to get to another room? Why? This is such a terrible design choice.
My thoughts exactly. Like, who designed this? I don't see that meeting code.
Yeah.
No.
Well, in 1946, these female engineering students decided to form a group called the Society of Women Engineers, quote, to promote friendship and to pool our old quizzes. They brought it to the student council and they were an official campus organization.
Ah, that's beautiful.
Raise a glass for Sweet.
Meanwhile, that same year at the University of Colorado, Elsie's alma mater, there's a group being organized there called the Society of Women Engineers.
Oh, it's spreading without them even knowing it.
Let's go.
From 1947 to 1949, groups naming themselves the Society of Women Engineers are formed by working female engineers and students in Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and D.C.
And another one, and another one, and another one.
So none of these groups know the others exist, okay? Then in 1949, the students at Drexel decided to host a conference for women engineering students on the East Coast. They called it the first conference of the Society of Women Engineers.
OMG, what's gonna happen?
I think with every progression that we've heard, it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, I love how it all came together.
Yeah.
So 70 students came to the event from 19 universities. At this meeting, they formed a regional student group of SWE and a graduate group. They also discussed forming a national women's engineering group.
Finally, the light bulb moment. Can you imagine them? Wait, what? Your SWE? I'm imagining them like the Spider-Man meme where they're all pointing at each other. And then after a few seconds, they're all like, we're all SWE. And they join forces.
I'm sure that's exactly how it went.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
The student group was led by Phyllis Evans Miller, and the graduate group included Beatrice Hicks, Rosalind Keller, Betty Jay, and Dr. Grace Hopper and Miriam Gerla, to name a few.
Like our Grace Hopper, like our episode 88 computer engineer Grace Hopper?
Yep.
Oh, this is just lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, a year later, on May 27 and 28th, in 1950, over 60 women engineers and engineering students descended on the Cooper Union's Green Engineering Camp in Ringwood, New Jersey. It was here that they formed the National Organization of the Society of Women Engineers, a group of students, engineering graduates, and working engineers.
Amazing.
So many future episode alerts. We would be blowing air horns every 5 minutes on this episode if we addressed them all.
Yeah. So at this meeting, Beatrice Hicks was elected the first president of SWE. Phyllis Evans Miller was elected secretary. The meeting got down to business to create their mission and framework for the organization. They set membership dues at $5 for graduate or professional members and $3 for students. They also created the original four sections or local chapters. Like in AIA, we call it chapters. They call them sections of SWE. They were Philadelphia, Metropolitan New York, which is now New York, New England, now Boston, and Washington, now Baltimore, Washington.
I love the organization of it all.
Me too.
They formed committees to research how to formally incorporate the group, a committee to write bylaws, an awards committee, and an admissions convention auditing financial advisory membership publicity committee. The last one seems a bit heavy.
Yeah. For that time, heck yeah. But they had so much that they wanted to tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah. That last committee, I think, could have been broken down just a tiny bit more. I mean, I would happily take on membership committee. I'd even be willing to take on publicity. But the six items they wanted one committee to take on, no thank you. But hey, someone made it work.
That's right.
Yeah.
They also formed a publications committee. Alma Kuppinger Foreman was chosen to be the director of publications to keep all the members informed. Okay, so these ladies, they were funny, all right? So the New York section already had a newsletter called The Woman Engineer. After this meeting, they printed an obituary for their newsletter and a birth announcement for the new SWE publication. All right, I'm going to read it to you because it's very funny. With deep regrets, the editorial family of The Woman Engineer mourns the loss of its dear departed parent newsletter. as of the summer of 1950. To our many loyal followers, we extend thanks and fond farewells, but do not grieve too long because announcing a new arrival. Name, suggestions welcome for the title of the new regional journal. Arrival, fall of 1950. Weight, heavy, we hope. Sex, female, of course. Chief nursemaids for the new arrival will be appointed by the president of the regional society, Beatrice A. Hicks, with the approval of the council. Assistants to the chief governess will be present editors of the district newsletters, Sophia Kosker-Kian, in charge of the New York doings, and Tina Malili, rounding up world-shattering events emanating from Philadelphia. Elsie Eves has accepted the headaches involved in the position of advisory editor.
This is hilarious.
This is my group. See you later, AIA. Gonna fulfill the dream I didn't know I had to become a mechanical engineer and join SWE. Maybe I can join as an ally, because becoming a mechanical engineer now, that doesn't sound fun.
Well, the Journal of the Society Women Engineers arrived a bit late in the spring of 1951, but it was renamed the SWE Newsletter in 1954.
You know, that baby was just cooking.
Yeah, need a little more time.
Yeah, a little more time to bake. Well, welcome to the world, new regional journal.
Weight, heavy. Sex, female, of course.
Yeah. In 1951, SWE held its first national convention in New York City. There were 112 attendees. On February 13, 1952, they were officially incorporated as a nonprofit educational service organized in D.C. The same year, the first SWE Achievement Award was given to Maria Telkis. And in 1954, the first student sections were organized at Drexel and Purdue.
Now we name drop in episode 85, Lady Maria Telkis? We should have played bingo.
Oh, no. Lizzie is breaking some sort of She Will's podcast record today.
All right, back to Elsie. You heard her name mentioned before in relation to the newsletter, but she was at the founding meeting in May of 1950 and remained involved with SWE for the rest of her life. An advisory editor to the journal, as we mentioned, she lent her publishing and business experience. She was on the board of trustees for 15 plus years, was active in her New York section, and attended the yearly SWE conventions. She was the public relations chairman for the first International Conference of Women Engineers and Scientists in 1964.
She was a part of the movement. She was in the room where it happened.
That's right. In 1963, Elsie retired from ENR when she was 65. She, of course, didn't really retire. She was a consultant and civilian advisor for the National Commission on Urban Affairs on Housing Costs. She also advised the International Executive Service Corps on construction cost indexes in Tehran, Iran.
What is retirement? Okay. But I do like the title of civilian advisor.
I hope she was getting paid for all of this.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, I would think.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Some personal fun facts about Elsie. When she was still in Colorado, she started really getting into cars. So over the years, she bought several specialty cars, a 1925 Chevy Roadster with balloon tires, a 1936 Chevy Roadster with a rumble seat, and a Model T, which she apparently drove from New York City to Denver, which would have taken so long at that time because there were no interstates. But she also bought an abandoned German lifeboat and turned it into a houseboat.
This sounds like a baddie hobby.
Did I ever tell you guys that I would love to live in a houseboat? You don't have to pay property taxes on them. Yeah, because it's on the water. But in South Florida, I don't know how a houseboat would fare during hurricane season. So
it seems dangerous.
Well, that's as close as I get because I don't know squat about cars. But the names sound cool.
Yeah. In 1939, she moved to Long Island where she bought a house and worked on renovating it over the years. She loved swimming, so she added a glass enclosed swimming pool to the house. And the house was called Land Ahoy, which leads to her other hobby, sailing, which she took up in retirement and entered into a few races.
We had another lady who retired and became a sailor. Not gonna lie, that's a retirement plan that I would do.
You would? Wouldn't that count as nature? Cleaning seagull droppings and stuff?
My exception with nature is that it has to be by water. I'm a Floridian Pisces after all. But my retirement plan would be on a boat that is not a cruise, and hopefully my budget would cover seagull poop cleanup, or, you know, the grandkids will need chores to do. They can take care of that. But Elsie has the right plan, spending retirement poolside or on a boat.
Ah, gotcha. We really are learning so much about so much on today's episode.
Yeah.
Elsie was the first woman member of the American Association of Cost Engineers. And in 1980, Elsie was made the first fellow of SWE.
Very fitting.
Cost engineers. Oh, we learned so many things on this show.
There's an engineer for everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 1983, Elsie lobbied SWE to provide childcare at the annual conventions. She felt that mothers shouldn't have to miss out on professional development and networking opportunities at these conventions.
Preach!
Elsie, you're officially my favorite engineer. It's all Lena Bobardi and Elsie Eves in my heart now.
On March 27, 1983, Elsie passed away at 84 years old. The Rocky Mountain section of SWE has a scholarship in honor of Hilda, Lou Alta, and Elsie called the Pioneer Scholarship.
She did so much. And she truly is a pioneer. I feel like that was the Mount Rushmore of engineers right there.
Thank you for all the doors you opened, Elsie. She's such a great example of professional achievement, not just for women engineers, but for women across the AEC profession. Really enjoyed this episode, Lizzie.
Yay, I'm glad.
Yeah.
All right. We've now reached the second part of our episode, the Caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who's working today, furthering the profession through her work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Without further ado, drum roll, please.
Dr. Yvette E. Pearson.
Yeah! Woo!
Yvette. So, Yvette is a civil engineer. She has a BS in civil engineering and an MS in chemistry from Southern University and A&M College. She has a graduate certificate in educational research methodology from University of Illinois, Chicago, and a PhD in engineering and applied science from the University of New Orleans. She's a registered professional engineer in Louisiana and a program evaluator for the Engineering Accreditation Commission of ABET.
Ooh, very cool.
Wow.
Yeah. She said that she knew very early on that she wanted to teach engineering. So she's been working in engineering education and research for over 25 years. She is the founder and lead consultant of the Pearson Evaluation and Education Research Group, or PEER, which aims to advance fairness, access, and opportunity for all in STEM education and practice. She was also an associate dean at the Brown School of Engineering at Rice University in Houston, and she's now the associate dean at UT Dallas.
Oh, wow. She was very focused on what she wanted to do.
She's making waves in my backyard, y'all.
That's right. She's a fellow of the American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, which we talked about this episode, and was the inaugural chair of ASCE's Members of Society Advancing an Inclusive Culture, or MOSAIC. This is an advisory council on DEI within ASCE. She helped spearhead ASCE's Code of Ethics to include DEI when she was the vice chair of the Committee on Diversity and Inclusion.
Oh, love to see this. This is awesome.
Yvette is also a podcast host, y'all. She hosts Engineering Change, which hopes to reimagine who we see as engineers and what we see as engineering, de-siloing our approach to academic programs, research, and problem solving, and fine-tuning organizational conditions so people with different backgrounds and perspectives can contribute fully to outcomes that serve all of society.
How exciting.
Future Charette alert. This is great. Would love to meet a fellow podcaster. And we love the mission.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects that we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and caryatid, along with our banter, and that you're inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you enjoyed it, Please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your history buffs. Tell them all. Also, give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify. Write us a review. This all helps us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise at shebuildspodcast.com/merch.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at SheBuildsPodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our website, SheBuildsPodcast.com. Or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at SheBuildsPodcast and on X at SheBuildsPod. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.
What's going on today? Like, FIFA is happening, okay? Not NASCAR. Like, what?